Good evening.
Good evening.
Glad to be back with you. Thankful for your presence. It sure is encouraging to be here again. It'll be our last time on Sunday night, at least for a month, I think. So I'll make sure to preach till midnight. I handed you all a song, number 161. This is Jesus, Draw Me Ever Nearer. It is going to be one of the songs that's in the supplement that's getting ready to be printed off. Hopefully we'll have those sometime in the very near future. And we're going to spend some time learning this song together. We're going to look at some lessons that we can learn from this. This is a family favorite of ours. And it's my mom's favorite. It was sung at my dad's funeral. He died 11 months ago yesterday. It's hard to imagine. It's been that long already. So we're going to sing this, and then we'll talk about some lessons we can learn from this song, and then we'll sing it at the end as well. If you see two grown men cry, Logan and I, just keep on singing, okay? It touches both of us in different ways. But we're going to give this a shot here. We'll sing all three verses and then we'll do the chorus at the end. Jesus, draw me ever nearer as I live. On our way here, and then in the announcements, just got news that Kobe Bryant died in a helicopter along with some family and some others. You just never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen in your life. There are a lot of things that take place, and there are a lot of difficulties. And this song is about that. It's about your different situations you go through, or a lot of difficult circumstances we face, and the best thing we can do is go to God in prayer. And so this is a song that is a prayer, and I don't know about you guys, but there have been, I don't know, countless prayers that I've prayed, and I wish I had not prayed them. From the standpoint, for example, sometimes I ask God for humility, and I wish I hadn't done that. Because sure enough, later in the day, I get something that humbles me beyond what I could even imagine. When we sing a song like this, hopefully we all thought about what this song actually means. But if not, we're going to go through it and we're going to discuss what this song has to say to us. And I would encourage you that if you're not able to sing the song, don't sing the song yet if you can't, if it's not something you feel like you can pray to God yet. But I do want us to think about some things that this song teaches us. In this first verse, it says, "Jesus, draw me ever near as I labor through the storm. You have called me to this passage, and I'll follow though I'm worn." The first thing I just want us to think about is it's kind of interesting that we go and we're praying to God and we ask Him to be near to us. Because the first thing we need to realize is that God is always near. He's always been nearer. And that main point of this prayer is that God would draw near to us as we make this long journey, this long trek to heaven. But the immediately raises this question, how near is God? Is He so far away that we must ask Him to come closer? I like Genesis chapter 3 because in prior to that chapter, when they're in the garden, I mean, you're in a garden where there's everything is perfect. There's no sin. There's no chaos. You're in there in that garden with God. There's no need to ask God to come any nearer because He's right there in your presence, walking in the cool of the day. But in Genesis chapter 3, after His own creatures made in His image, they transgress and have forgotten the extreme blessings of what God had done for them. Can you imagine being in the ultimate presence of God and forgetting He was near to you? And yet, do you remember God's reply after they had sinned? Where are you? That would have given me more than a spook. How about you? Where are you? And the point is that God has always been near. He's always been seeking. He is the one that's taking the initiative. And I just want to read, I'm not going to go through all these, you don't have to turn to these passages, but I just want you to notice some of this language in the Bible. Deuteronomy 4:7, "For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us whenever we call upon Him?" Psalm 34 and verse 18, "The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit." Psalm 145 and verse 18, "The Lord is near to all who call on Him, to all who call on Him in truth." And then, of course, one of my favorite psalms is Psalm 139. And we all know how this psalm begins. In Psalm 139, he talks about how the Lord has searched him and known him. He knows when he sits down, when he rises up. In verse 7, "Where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascended to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me." And then, of course, 2 Chronicles 16 and verse 9. I really like this passage. "The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to give strong support to those whose heart is blameless toward Him." I mean, He is roaming the earth, searching for those who are righteous. God is not slow to see our needs. He is not distracted. He is not preoccupied. He is nearer because we are needier than any creatures on this earth. When you come to the New Testament, then you see Jesus as the Good Shepherd, in which He answers the criticisms that He's running around with the wrong people. Of all things, the Messiah, the Christ, is running around with the wrong people. Can you imagine that? And what is so chilling is that God is the offended party. We are the ones who have driven the wedge, and we are the ones who have pushed God farther and farther away, and yet He takes initiative. God has always been nearer and seeking us, and the problem is that we just keep running farther away from Him. In James chapter 4, it says we better turn around. James says we better turn around and draw near to Him, and if we do that, God will draw near to us. And so this prayer, this song, is so appropriate. The very asking of God to draw near or closer to Him is an admission that I have pulled away. And this needs to be a daily prayer. But before you pray it, you need to know what drawing near to God looks like. And that's what the second verse talks about. It means letting Jesus guide you. Now, turn over to Luke chapter 5. I mean, Jesus is doing the same thing that he did with the disciples when he calls them. He calls and they immediately follow. I'm not sure they knew exactly what they were getting themselves into when they immediately followed him. They soon would learn. But you'll notice here in Luke chapter 5, it begins, Jesus calls some of the first disciples. And then Jesus goes and he heals a paralytic. And then he makes this mistake of calling a tax collector to follow him. And then in I'm saying that facetiously. In verse 33, this is the question about fasting. It says, and they said to him, the disciples of John fast often and offer prayers. And so the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours eat and drink. And Jesus said to them, can you make wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them? The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them. Then they will fast in those days. He also told them a parable. No one tears a piece from a new garment and puts it on an older garment. If he does, he will tear the new, and the piece from the new will not match the old. And no one puts the new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the new wine will burst the skins, and it will be destroyed, and the skins will be destroyed. I want you to think about what Jesus is saying here. We don't have the time to go into all of this. There's a sermon by Paul Earnhardt. He did back in the summer of 19, one of the best lessons on the wineskins I've ever heard in my life. And what Earnhardt said is to follow Jesus means we must have elastic hearts. Do you think about that? We must have elastic hearts. What was Jesus' point to the Pharisees? He didn't fit into the world to which he came. His teachings, his way of life, they didn't jive with the world. They wouldn't mix. In other words, his teachings could only bring about rebellion or submission. He had one or two choices. And so the point of this parable is that to follow Jesus, we must have elastic hearts. We must be willing to let God stretch us. For God to draw nearer, for Jesus to guide us, we must be willing to be stretched and to be pulled. We must be ready to radically change in our thinking and doing as Christians. Fellowship with Jesus is it's a never-ending adventure. Not because he is changing, but because we are. And so letting Jesus guide you, it's a big change. We don't like change. There's a theme in the Bible that runs throughout the whole Bible, actually. One that was helped me, Paul Miller, in that book on Praying Life, helped me to see this. It's the theme of the desert. His people, God's people, are going through these momentary life situations where they're being blessed. And before you know it, they find themselves in a desert or in a wilderness. You had the children of Israel wandering in the wilderness. You had David as a king, or right before he became king, he was being chased by Saul. He found himself in the wilderness of Ziph. You had Jesus, who's also going into a wilderness for 40 days. What is the purpose of all that? Sometimes we become too comfortable with the blessings that God gives us, and we forget about him. And God uses those deserts, because what's in the desert? What grows in the desert? Not much. He basically brings you there and he makes you empty all the things that you would take all the comfort in. So that it would help you realize that you need to find your dependence in God alone. Letting Jesus guide us, letting Jesus draw near, will end in a great reward. But we have to be willing to tread through the tempest. and through the storms. And those tools are God, are tools that God is using, these afflictions, these sufferings, these momentary pains, they're tools that God is using to change us. And when we refuse to enter those wastelands, we will find a major problem: spiritual hardening. We'll be tempted to plead with God for no more changes. Have you ever done that? Have you ever said, "I've had enough, can't take any more"? In Jesus' model prayer, he asked for God's kingdom to come. And I've always kind of considered that in terms of the universal sense, and I think that is true in a sense. But there's a reality about that prayer in which we need to pray and say, "God, will you please, will your kingdom come into my heart?" Think about it before you pray it. Because once you allow him to do that, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be difficult. But it will cause a change. That's a big ask. Requires big change. In Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 16, Jesus, or Paul there in that prayer, talks about one of the purposes of us being in this life is to find the fullness of God. That is an immense journey. It's a journey that can't be accomplished if we present ourselves to him with rigid, unwilling hearts. So may we ask Jesus to draw near to us, not in time, but toward the timeless. And as we allow him to expand our hearts, we will learn to love him more and more each day. In this song, it says, "Jesus, guide me through the tempest. Keep my spirit stayed and sure. When the midnight meets the morning, let me love you even more." And then here's this final verse. "Let the treasures of the trial form within me as I go, and at the end of this long passage, let me leave them at your throne." If I had, if I hadn't been losing my mind, I wouldn't have been up till midnight last night trying to put this together if I had known I wasn't preaching this morning. I struggled with this verse and how to get this to really sink in for me and for us. What are the treasures of a trial that form within us? And when you finish the race, what's it mean to lay those treasures at the throne? Logan this afternoon mentioned that, you know, it's one of those things where you go through all these trials and you do your best to get through them with faith in God. And at the end of the day, when God takes you home, you can leave them all there and say, "I am finished. I'm done." There are different ways in which I think treasures are formed. This is in Romans chapter 5. It says, "Suffering produces endurance. And endurance produces character, and character produces hope. And hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us." The treasure that we have when we go through these persecutions and sufferings in life is that it produces endurance, produces character. What's forming within us is Jesus. And then I got to thinking about this passage in Isaiah 53, and I don't know if I'm right about this. This probably means I shouldn't even mention this. But turn to Isaiah 53 for just a moment, and I want you to think about what we have here. This is, of course, the suffering servant, and he talks about, you know, who's going to believe this message? Well, of course, nobody's going to believe this message, that this Messiah is going to come and suffer in this way. He was despised. He was somebody who was looked upon and people found disgust. They wanted to vomit when they looked at Jesus suffering like that. They could care less. He was born in Nazareth, of all places, the one place that he had to be born. He didn't want to be born there. But he was oppressed and he was afflicted. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter. Verse 12 is what I want us to look at. It says, therefore, I will divide him a portion with the many. And he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he poured out his soul to death and was numbered with the transgressors. What are the treasures that Jesus got to take with him while he was suffering? I wouldn't call them treasures. Charlie's like, no, I wouldn't either. His treasures are us. He takes guilty, sinful, despicable people as his treasures to the cross. But guess what happens? Yeah, he bore the sin of many, and he makes intercession for the transgressors. He goes to the cross. His treasures are guilty people like us, but when he rises and he goes and he's exalted, he leaves those treasures, us, at the throne of God. And he intercedes for us. Now, if that doesn't motivate us to get through the sufferings that we face, I don't know what will. There's a poem I want to read. When God wants to drill a man and thrill a man and skill a man, when God wants to mold a man to play the noblest part, when he yearns with all his heart to create so great and bold a man that all the world shall be amazed, watch his methods, watch his ways, how he ruthlessly perfects whom he royally elects, how he hammers him and hurts him, and with mighty blows converts him into trial shapes of clay, which only God understands, while his tortured heart is crying and he lifts beseeching hands. How he bends but never breaks when his good he undertakes. How he uses whom he chooses, and which every purpose fuses him, by every act includes him, to try his splendor out. God knows what he's about. It's an anonymous author. In this verse of this song, we finally get to see the reward. If we will pray that God draw near to us, if we will ask Jesus to guide us, change us, then we will be like him. May this journey be a blessing. May I rise on wings of faith. At the end of my heart's testing, with your lightness, let me wake. I'm not going to say this with any disrespect whatsoever. I'm actually acknowledging the amount of wisdom in this room. Most of you all are older than me. And you probably can attest to this more than I can. But if our faith is going to be steadfast and immovable, it will be because of the difficult days. Difficult days in which we have honestly asked Jesus to draw near, not farther apart. Lewis says, pain demands attention. God whispers to us in our pleasure. He speaks to us in our conscience. And he shouts to us in our pain. And I have to say that pain has been a far better teacher for me than pleasure has. I never knew that Dad's death would draw me closer to God in ways that I never saw coming. But it was God's way of saying, Andrew, your heart is not elastic enough. I need room to be able to stretch it. We can't grow in the Lord if we tell him that's it. I can't take it anymore. God's always nearer. The problem is we don't draw nearer to him. And so this is an appropriate prayer, and it's a wonderful song. Just make sure we sing it in a way that we're ready for transformation. We're ready for guidance of Jesus. And if you are, then you will wake up loving him more. And when he comes back, you'll find yourself transformed completely in his image. We're going to sing this song, and then I'll say just one more thing here, and then we'll have our invitation song. This time we will sing the sing the chorus after each verse.
Jesus, draw me ever nearer as I labor through the storm. You have called me to this passage, and I'll follow though I'm worn. May this journey bring a blessing. May I
turn to number 436. We're getting ready to sing that. Come on up here. You know, before in the Old Testament, the people of God who suffered, they left the world with an unfinished story. I mean, they suffered, they went through a lot of the pain, and they didn't get to see the ending of Jesus. We live after the fact, so we got the ultimate story that's finished. But we're all here now with unfinished stories. We don't know what's next. We don't know what's going to happen next. Jesus told Peter and John, you're going to die for me. And he says, well, what about that guy over there? What about John? He said, don't worry about him. Let God take care of that. We don't know all of the unfinished stories, and it may be that it's best that we don't. Maybe God knows we couldn't handle it. In that book, Paul Miller's book, his daughter, Kim, has autism, a pretty severe case, and she can't talk. She uses a computer to talk. But he has a story in there at the very end. They've been working with her a lot, and she's progressed a lot. And she's able to work. She has her own little place to live, I think, next to them. But at one moment, they were talking to her, and she said, "I can't wait to get home, because I know when I get there, God's going to give me a beautiful voice." And if we have that perspective, we can get through anything. You can imagine being in a body like that and feeling trapped. But she's getting through it because she sees something greater for her. And that's what will get us through. So if there's any way we can help you tonight, let's make that story a little bit more of a finished product before he comes. If you need to come forward and become a Christian, we ask that you do that now as we stand and sing.